city.
Hello, everybody. Michael C. Rupert, Tracker of Truth. Glad to be back with you again on the 2nd of February in the year 2014. It's freezing cold here in the San Luis Valley of Colorado, but hey, listen, the whole world's having trouble tonight, buddy. 3-4 million people in Jakarta flooded out. Great Britain, the UK getting hammered by yet another frozen hurricane. Up to 5 feet of snow in Austria. And a record heat wave returning to Australia. The weather, we don't even need to make a point because almost all of us tonight are aware of it, that and the drought in California. Minus 20 tonight, but it was sunny today, and we deal with it. We walk on. I'd like to say farewell to a friend to all of us, Pete Seeger, and thank him for the wonderful body of work and music that he left us. He crossed over this week. And I'd also like to say a very big thank you to Carolyn Baker, who hosted last night, filling in for me while I was away at UEP. We'll talk about that tonight. She and Gail Zawaski were just amazing, and I was so pleased to hear the feminine power and energy and the courage that was offered in last week's show. You guys did a great job. As I'm sitting here in southern Colorado tonight with, you know, record, well, almost record, but really brutal cold where I live, I'm aware that there have been propane shortages all over the Midwest and the Northeast for heating, and I depend upon propane heating. And I have to admit tonight that I might not be alive this winter. I might have frozen to death this winter were it not for fracked gas, and that is the point that all of us in peak oil were trying so hard to avoid, where it comes to a choice between two evils like that. Richard Heinberg will be on with us in March. He's got a new book out. There are about 600,000 fracking wells operating in the country right now. They burn out very quickly, and more have to be drilled to deal with infinite growth. We've had some major train wrecks this week and pipeline bursts due to temperature changes. There are new records and new extremes being set between hot and cold. TRN, the Real News, did an okay report on it this week, but they didn't mention the real cause of why trains are derailing and pipelines are rupturing. It's because the temperature swings exceed the tolerance of the metals to expand and contract. They wear out and they break. And we have new records set for derailment of petroleum trains, oil trains, and trains carrying junk this year because the infrastructure is also failing. Just want to mention briefly in passing that the third prominent banker, and I mean these are heavyweight bankers, found dead in 6 days. One is a former chief economist for the New York Fed, and there's a couple other big bankers in there. This is not a rabbit hole we need to go down as the infinite growth paradigm fails, as I have written that it would. This was to be expected. This was on the map. I wrote about it in my book, Crossing the Rubicon. I wrote about it from the wilderness. And a lot of you remember that. This is just where, this is a place that we're going through on the way to the eschaton, this evolution that we are being faced with now as human beings. January was the UK's wettest month in 250 years. Britain, Wales, Ireland, Scotland are all absolutely soggy, and there are storms lining up to pummel. I would not want to be in England or any of those islands right now. That would be tougher than being here. One point to make: all of the things which I was so clear about 2 months ago, when I had completely changed my MO here, are still underway. Fukushima is still completely out of control and worsening. I'm going to got a brief comment to follow on Fuku here in a minute. Infinite growth is still chugging away. All of the coal-fired plants, industrial activity, all of the things pumping carbon into the atmosphere are still underway, and infinite growth is still underway. We are adding 250,000 people a day to the planet, and they cannot be fed in this system. One story that was important this week from Robin Westenra was Scoop, Scoop IT, Scoop Italy. And Scoop's done some great investigative journalism. one story I found particularly appalling, that under the new secrecy laws in Japan, the first crackdown, one of the biggest crackdowns, appears to be on doctors who are being threatened with jail if they report how many people are dying of cancer, how many teenagers have come down with thyroid cancer, leukemia, all caused by Fukushima. And that is just it's just brutal what's happening there, and I need to remind us all that that is still underway, along with all of the other failing plants. Okay, now, got that done pretty quick, because this is going to be an important show, and I've spent a lot of time on this show today. If you have watched part one of the Vice film, Apocalypse, comma, Man, part one, part two, part three, part four will be out next week. I'm exceedingly happy with it and grateful to the director, Andy Capper. Those Vice guys did a great job. You saw me going into a sweat lodge before I gave the interviews, and the sweat lodge was run by a very dapper, charming medicine man, who is my friend and my teacher, Chris Long, of the Sacred Stone Lodge here in Crestone. It's where I go to practice. And you saw him there, and that's where I go when I need help. But before I bring Chris on, let me tell you how I met him. Before I came to Crestone, you all walked with me through the what will we call it, the death that I went through in Sebastopol when I lost all of my material stuff and fired myself from collapse that and came here clean, if you will, to be reborn from the ashes. But before I came, I'd had a vision about a month before I left. A hyacinth macaw feather had materialized literally between my legs at a jam session in Sonoma, California. I knew it was a sacred feather, and I was given a vision to find a man who would show me who would weave it, wrap it in a traditional way so that it could be worn from a ponytail. And shortly after I got to Crestone, I did my detective stuff, and I was led to Chris Long. And that was a wonderful, wonderful meeting. And much has happened since then. A new life has formed. I am not going to spend a lot of time introducing him, because we deal in spirituality, especially on this show, because there are so many people from so many different traditions who come to listen. What we share is that we all love Mother Earth. But there's this issue of political correctness. And I had to list him tonight as a medicine man, but so that others might recognize him, shaman, but there are political, you know, that's horrible stuff. So my dear friend, my teacher, Chris Long, welcome to the Lifeboat Hour, and tell us how you call yourself, what you are, and what you do.
Well, thank you, Michael. I call myself a spiritual teacher, and I know in our traditions we don't say medicine man, that's for others to say, but yeah, I'm spreading a message and also waking people up to spirituality by the ceremonies that I've learned to do.
Now, you have been at this for a long time. You apprenticed for a great many years, and you work, I believe the term is, under an altar. Could you tell us how you came to this position, how many years you did that, and what your affiliation is with the altar and whose altar it is?
Yeah, I started when I was, 21. I did my first vision quest and met a teacher and began working with him when I was 26 years old, 25, 26, and began my formal apprenticeship shortly afterwards. So I took care of the fire and did various other things and learned that way, mm-hmm, through experience. And then I guess it was probably about 7-8 years into that, he passed me an altar. And so that was a half-moon altar of the Native American church. So I became a roadman then. And so it's a very specific design of an altar, which calls specific spirits. And just like all altars of all traditions, carry something slightly different, and that's why they're all each different. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, so I've been doing this for quite some time now, and probably about 20 years I've been doing the Native American church, and that was with Relio Diaz, Tecpan Kali. Mm-hmm. And I also became a Yuwipi man then with James Crow Dog.
And these are all names that are well known around the world. And I think what's important, because we talked about this when we went to Albuquerque last weekend, is that, you know, there is, authority or authenticity to working under an altar, which implies what, the continuation, the faithful continuation of tradition?
Yeah. Yes, because these altars, just like in any tradition, they have certain spirits that work with them.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, you know, a lot of the major spirits are the same, like the rulers of the universe. But there's also very specific spirits that work with altars. And so basically I was assigned a group of spirits that I work with, and that would be one way of putting it.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And this is a little sidebar, but this is good, because we've developed here over quite some time. I started several years ago talking about my experiences in the 12 Steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, where spiritual experiences, even supernatural ones, are acquired without drugs, without medication, but through the practice of disciplines which involve cleaning house, trusting, being of service, so on. But we've also discussed the fact that through natural chemical compounds like DMT, ayahuasca, mushrooms, and the peyote, it is also possible to have direct encounter with spirits. And since I have been in your lodge, I have had experiences both in the Yuwipi, but also even in sweats, the Anipis, of experiencing spirits, which is a reality. So, that being said, when you talk about the specific group of spirits that were assigned to you, what do they represent that might be different or understood in other traditions or paths around the world? Is there a particular flavor?
Well, no, because these spirits can be very specific. They can be ghosts or immortals. Just like in the Catholic religions, there are saints. And these are individuals that are able to stay conscious and aware and remain that way, and
mm-hmm.
even work and help in our lives. And just like somebody may experience a ghost or a spirit, a nature spirit or something like that, visit them, and that can happen a lot. In fact, it happens all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Our awareness is interwoven with spirits. So a lot of times our thoughts and memories and feelings oftentimes are linked to different spirits and ghosts and all kinds of things. So we experience these things all the time.
Mm-hmm.
But under certain conditions, they're able to manifest.
Now, before we went to this ceremony last week, and I'm going to share this openly because I believe that those who are in leadership or teaching positions serve the people when the people can hear them say, ow, it hurts, and this is how I deal with it. I was in a very, very bad place before we went to the Yuwipi at Steve Blue Horses down in Albuquerque, and I was suffering from a major depression, in part caused by this relentless winter, but I also had some serious gastrointestinal stuff going on that was really compounding that. And I'm just not having whatever it is, disorder. This is a brutal place where I live, and it has been brutally cold.
Yes.
And also with a number of revelations, understandings, if you will, that have been given to me over the last couple of months about the state of the world and our relationship with Mother Earth. This show, we have, you know, people from many different traditions around the world, but what we all share in common is that we love Mother Earth. So we went to a Yuwipi, and I was one of the three people that were the focus of the healing in that ceremony, and it worked. I'll talk about that later, but why don't you tell us, because there are not many Yuwipi men, tell us what a Yuwipi is and how it works.
Well, Yuwipi is a really ancient ceremony. Yuwipi is a Lakota term for that specific variety of the ceremony. This is usually one where the medicine man is bound and tied up in a blanket and laid down in a darkened room, and the spirits are able to use his body in this symbolic death sacrifice that he makes. They're able to use the energy of his body to be able to manifest. And it's not unlike a lot of the old seances in the Victorian era, which is very much the same kind of a thing where the spirit's hands are able to manifest and move things about.
Mm-hmm.
And but this is a very ancient ceremony, and it comes from, they say, anthropologists and archaeologists say that it came from Siberia, and it traveled to different parts of the world along with the Mastodon. So it's believed by experts to be the primary religion of the Neanderthal.
Mm-hmm.
So it's the spirits that work with that type of altar and that type of practice are very, very valuable to us as human beings, because if it's lost, then we really lose the connection, an ancient connection to part of ourselves.
Now, let me jump in here and say that this was my second UEP. I've been to one with you, and things happen. Things happen. Things move. Things move through the air. You see amazing things, and there are absolutely zero drugs involved. But if you've been there, you would know that this is real. Now, and what I say to this is, there are a lot of people who are nowhere near as savant as we are in this family here on this show, who would question something like that. But we experience this, and we know that these powers are real, and I would call them the suppressed technologies that so many people mistakenly believe have to do with circuit boards and junk like that. The
uh-huh.
suppressed technologies are the wisdoms that have been held by all of the traditions around the world, that ever since what Daniel Quinn might call the great forgetting of totalitarian agriculture, ever since we slipped into this consciousness of duality, or as the Hopi might say from Prophecy Rock, mankind split and chose to walk a material path, I would submit that these suppressed technologies are what the industrialized world has been trying to kill, to wipe out, but they are still here and they are available. How did I do with that, Chris?
Yeah. Well, you know, it's a very interesting thing that's happening in our world today, that we're experiencing the domestication of humankind.
Mm.
So that's basically cutting us off from our spiritual selves and our intuitive selves. Our intuitive selves, that intuitive part is our wild side. And so as we become domesticated, we certainly become more intelligent, but we also lose that intuitive, instinctive thing. And, you know, as children of the earth, we really need to stay close to the earth to keep those connections.
Mm-hmm.
You can see human awareness is very rapidly changing, and this isn't just a New Age speculation or anything like that.
No.
It's something that can be seen in a laboratory and observed with wild and domestic mice, for instance. You know, so
that's cool. I mean, and that's the point I think I've been trying to make for years on this show. The message I've been trying to carry is that spiritual practice is absolutely demonstrable in a way that can be proven and can be experienced. What's required is willingness, among other things. We're getting close to time to play the first song here of the night, and in terms of our music here at the nightclub at the end of the world, there's going to be a great deal of synchronicity in this show, and I love synchronicity, and I know that Chris is very aware of it too. Graham Hancock, who's been a guest on this show, we all love Graham Hancock. You know, he's continuing to do his thing out there in the world. Just 2 days ago, he has never sent out a song. He sent out a song 2 days ago, and this song is absolutely perfect for this show tonight and where we're going to go, because Chris and I are both aware that a lot of people, especially people walking the red path, that's the spiritual path, are suffering now. We are aware, we are sensitive to the to the suffering that is going on around here. And we all wish, from whatever our tradition is, as long as we're rooted in Mother Earth and a unity consciousness, that this would, this suffering, this wounding would end. So Graham sent out a song by a group called Oco Pop. It's called Hear Those Drums. But here's just a little quote from the lyrics before we play. It's only a three-minute song. How much more must the world endure at the hands of so-called civilized society? 7 billion people want to be loved, want to be heard, and demand their identities. Medicine Man seeks a vision from the sun. The ghost of Geronimo lives on through the years. Hear those drums, they're beating loud, while the Cherokee Nation cries a trail of tears. Let's hear this great song. It'll lift you up. It's called Hear Those Drums.
To be free in your body. Endure at the hands of so-called civilized society. 7 billion people want to be loved, want to be heard, and demand their identities. Medicine Man seeks a vision from the sun. The ghost of Geronimo lives on through the years. Drums they're beating loud while the Cherokee Nation cries a trail of tears. But in time you'll get back the things that were taken away. This land that made believe will be yours again someday. So hold on to your roots, don't let them lead you astray. This sacred land.
I just love that song. It's called Hear Those Drums. The band name is Oco, O-K-O, Pop, two words. Find them on YouTube. I had them up on my Facebook page, thanks to Graham Hancock. I love that synchronicity for this show. They mentioned Cherokee in the song, Chris, and you are of indigenous blood also. You call yourself Cherokee, but I believe you were one of the five civilized nations, which is, which one, Chickasaw?
Cherokee Choctaw.
Cherokee Choctaw, okay. And yet, and this is what a lot of people might not understand around the world, in ceremony you speak Lakota, and you know we say the Lakota words and sing the Lakota songs, and you explained why that is. Why don't you tell everybody why that is, that that Lakota has become like a lingua franca in ceremony.
Yeah, you know, it's like that everywhere. In among most tribes, there's people that are interested in Lakota ceremonies, and the reason for that is because they have the making of relative ceremony, the Hunka ceremony, and so you can become basically a brother, a blood brother, like that type of a concept. You can become a member of the family, and that's what they've done with so many people all over the world, and really created an international spiritual practice out of the native ways.
Did white society successfully wipe out Cherokee culture too? Is there more Lakota accessible? You know, because we know that the efforts of the Wasichuways, you know, to wipe out the knowledge have been successful in large part.
Yeah, and they're getting better at that, and starting to use all kinds of technologies to be able to suppress that and to distract people from spirituality, and that worked amongst the so-called seven civilized tribes, and so they lost their connection and basically gained another connection, which was Christianity, which they still have.
But yet through all of this, there are ones around the world, and I'm, you know, here I include the Aborigines, the Bushmen in Australia, the Kalahari Bushmen, all of the indigenous peoples around the world who have preserved this relationship with Mother Earth throughout all kinds of persecutions. So now we have an audience of those people, Chris, and you know, it's just you and me talking. We're just two guys trying to be of service here is essentially what we are.
Uh-huh.
And if I were to offer a prayer tonight, and one of the things I love about indigenous ceremonies is that you pray at the drop of a hat. Every song is a prayer. Every drum beat is a prayer. Everything is a prayer. And these are not prayers that are meant to be done in secret. They're prayers that are meant to be sung openly and seen. I would offer a prayer that in our conversation tonight we can find something that will reach everyone around the world from every path. Who is suffering under the weight that's being carried, our awareness of the things that are happening, the fact that our death is near. And I would hope that we could do that. The four winds, I was going to pray for the four winds, but the four winds seem to be very angry lately, and they're changing. And they're being very expressive. But you have more experience on these fields than I do. What would you say to an audience like this, Chris?
In terms of what we should be doing now, or
yeah, and how we help each other to be strong through this, how we face our own challenges, and what vision we all might hold together that will bind us together as a family of two-leggeds.
Uh-huh. Well, I think the most important thing now at this crucial time in our Earth's history is to make those connections with the spirits and the spirits within ourselves as well, and to open up more and better communication to the spirits, and to understand that life is a test, that we're here to experience this life and gain from it. And basically spirituality, 75% of spirituality is all about the afterlife. And so a lot of times, you know, we're praying about our afterlife and making those connections. And so that's the important thing to do now, is to make those connections, especially if we're not going to be here tomorrow.
We are at the bottom of the hour. I just had to do a brief ID here. We are rolling without commercial breaks tonight. I kind of envisioned this, that Chris and I would hold a sacred space here, and I don't want to inject that energy in here, even if it's PRN commercials tonight. I want to hold the sacred space. This is a Michael Rupert, Tracker of Truth, with you on the Lifeboat Hour here on the Progressive Radio Network on the 2nd of February, 2014. I have some fundraising thank yous. You all know that I do what I do for free. I don't get paid for it. This radio show, I didn't get paid for the Vice thing, and I have been making it okay. We are getting through a tough winter, and I have some thank yous to Steve and Catherine Hassall, to Stephanie Murray, Mark Billups and Karen Olson. These aren't big amounts, but boy, the love you guys send. I have to read this one letter that came in. It's very short. Hey, Mike, happy birthday. Know that there are people out here who care about you, think about you, and who hold the vision of peace, equanimity, forbearance, and, yes, even joy for you in the midst of the craziness of our time. We are full on into the Kali Yuga now. That's from another discipline, one of the other groups that are here. And the most we can do is offer and help to relieve suffering and continue our spiritual practice. Hold your faith like a strong yoga pose, using no more muscles than is required, and remember to breathe. Everybody tells me to breathe all the time. Always your Santa Barbara friend, Karen Olson, who closes with, your ancestors rejoice for you, Michael Rupert, are still alive. This kind of love is true power. So if you'd like to help me out, I'm going to have to move out of here. I just can't. This is too much. Doug is cool with it. I'm going to move into Crestone, where it's much more sheltered. It's closer to the store. It's not 24 miles to the store. I'll be closer to Chris and Singing Stone Lodge and my family there. Of course, you know that I don't own anything. I moved here with everything. I don't own a dish or a plate. That'll work out. There are furnished places in town. I'm going to have to move. And if you'd like to help me, you can write to me at Mike Rupert, Tracker of Truth, 27378 Red Cloud Avenue, 27378 Red Cloud Avenue. In Moffitt, M-O-F-F-A-T, Colorado, 81143. And if you're on Facebook, send me a message there. I have PayPal, and you can donate that way. I'm not getting a lot, 5 here, 20 there, but the love is amazing, and I thank you for the great gifts and the great shirt from Mark Billups. And I prefer living this way. I know Chris suffers as every roadman, medicine man, whatever you call them, that I have encountered, because they don't hand out bills, and we do what we do for free, and Chris walks with that. Chris, you have a website. What is that, please?
Yeah, it's thesingingstone.com, and we post a lot of articles on there and different things to help the people, teachings, and also our calendar of events.
And you do quite a bit, and I've met some amazing people there. I have seen your power as I have seen the power at Basil Braveheart, Sundance, and the Black Hills, and certainly with Steve Bluehorse at the UEP ceremony, which helped me so much last week. We talked about this before the show, and I was going to talk about it, and I wasn't going to talk about it. I'm going to make a statement. And then I'm going to offer a prayer, and I'll do this on my own. And then, Chris, I'll ask you to comment. It's going to be very short. We all know, anyone who's been around reservations and Native American ways of life understand that the United States government has poisoned indigenous people on reservation forever by offering them, by making sure that the only food they had access to was poisoned. And now they are getting the worst GMO, discarded, polluted, which has an effect on consciousness. And it is a great unspoken tragedy. It is not First Peoples' fault. The people on the res have no choice. But I have been in ceremonies where the healer, the helper, the medicine man ate organically and healthy, and where they did not. And I have noticed a distinct difference in the energy, which to the people of other traditions who are out here, because I came up many paths, especially those central to relationship with plants and who know the plants, as you do, Chris. You suggested the sage for me, which was amazingly helpful. It hurts me to see so much suffering, and it would be a prayer for me that somehow, because we need the people who carry this wisdom to have the best energy now, and I would love to see some way to deal with that. It's a horrible crime that's been committed to inject these foods and the addiction that goes with into the peoples. And I take responsibility for that statement. Chris, you can take it away, whatever you want to say about it.
Yeah, you know, it's always a disappointment when we go to the reservations to go to different ceremonies and things like that, because there's not really any good food in the stores there, and that's been a very common practice for a very long time, and so there's not much there, you know. There's not much for them to choose for, and I realized that going into the supermarket that, that a lot of this food doesn't even go to the Native Americans. They get commodities from the government, things like canned pork and stuff that most people wouldn't even ever buy. So it's really sad to see that happening out there, and there's you know, political reasons for all this sort of thing, and it's, mm-hmm. It's really sad that it has to be that way, and it doesn't have to be that way. We can change it through education, through the computer, and telling people and showing opinions about the food and mm-hmm. how changing the diet changes everything. Of course, you know, most of these full bloods are, you know, a few hundred years ago, they were eating excellent, you know. And you can tell by the old pictures that they're all in excellent shape. Mm-hmm. Now you look at pictures and the people don't look so good.
I talked to a Hopi once and he saw a picture of, was it you? Somebody talked about it, but I've heard it before. You know, we used to look like that. That's not what we look like now. And that's, you know, it's pretty obvious. And there is suffering that goes along with that also, because I came here from a Guyan Wiccan pagan perspective where having a spiritual relationship to the live food that you ate was very important and determined to be a determiner, if you will, in how powerful your spiritual energy was. Does that make sense?
Oh, yeah, definitely. Spirituality is all about a connection to the spirits,
mm-hmm.
and that link can be obscured. And diet is one of those things that can obscure that link.
Through a glass darkly, as it says in the Bible, and it clouds up the gas, the glass. Excuse me. Before the break, we were on a good point about how one, and it could be one person, somebody out there, or it could be even a group of people, because we share collective tribal consciousness as well, mm-hmm. deals with it when you feel utterly overwhelmed. Now, we're going to have some listeners tonight, Chris, who may be very, very new to a spiritual path.
Mm-hmm.
So, and you were really starting to develop that theme, and I'd like you to take it a little bit further. But say you got somebody who doesn't, hasn't really, they've been beaten into a state of reasonableness, as they say in AA, and they're willing and open, but they're in pain. How would you approach helping someone like that?
Well, you know, the best thing that you could do is to call a bunch of your friends and buddies and basically pray for that person. That's one of the things that I would do. That's one of the best things that we can do for our fellow human.
Mm-hmm.
Is to kind of gang up on them with prayer. but of course, you know, there's doing ceremonies too, inviting that person to a ceremony and instructing as the intermediary with the spirits. I would instruct them to help that person. So that's a way that I could personally help in that kind of situation.
And the most common advice that I get and that I have gotten for the 30-some years I've walked the red path is breathe. And that seems to be a universal language, too. You can learn how to control your breath and sink into that. What other kinds of ceremonies? You know, there's Inipi, Uipi, there's the Sun Dance, there's Vision Quest. Why don't you take a minute to talk about each of those and what they do and what they're designed to do?
Yeah, well,
and the Peyote Lodge.
Uh-huh. Yeah, so we do the Sweat Lodge, Inipi. And that's a purification. And just like all of these, they're also a connection to the spirit, so we can make connections and also receive messages. The Sweat Lodge or Inipi also connects to the Hamblecha, which is the Vision Quest, and that's also part of that. The Vision Quest, that's something that a lot of people know about. That's where you go up on a hill and fast and meditate. It can last anywhere from usually from 1 to 4 days without food and water. And so it's a sacrifice to show that you mean business to the spirits. And there's all different types of vision quests like that. Then there's also the Yuwipi ceremony. That's where the medicine man is, like I said earlier, is tied up in a darkened room, and the spirits use his energy to be able to effect a cure and to make changes in our world and communicate with us.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's also the sun dance. That's an incredibly powerful ceremony. That's also using the sacred pipe, the pipe that the white buffalo calf woman brought to the people. So they use that chanupa, or sacred pipe, in that dance. And that's a dance that lasts 4 days, and it's usually done without food or water. And they dance probably about 2 hour stints for about 7 times each day.
Mm-hmm.
It varies. And there's also other dances, what's commonly known as the ghost dance. We call it a peace dance.
Good. Tell us about the ghost dance.
Yeah, that's a dance that came about in the 1890s when a lot of people were dying and there wasn't a way to bury all these people that were being massacred, basically. So people would get together and they would dance and dance with these ghosts in order to allow them to make that transition. So that's a dance that still has always been practiced in Canada and various other places, and something that's coming back now.
That was a dance that particularly scared the United States Army, wasn't it?
Well, it was they had an interest in it for the Wounded Knee massacre, because they knew that all these spiritual leaders would be together. So it wasn't particularly the dance that bothered them. What did bother them is the Yuwipi ceremony and some of these other ceremonies that seemed to give the natives great power or even bravery.
Mm-hmm. One of the things that saves everybody, and I believe is universal across all traditions, regardless of what terminology you use or how you look at it, and I am so praying, my heart so hungers for something that will resonate universally, because two-leggeds, especially those of us who are awake, need to get on the same page. But humor is, and you are an extreme, you have a great sense of humor. I mean, the way I look at Chris Long is like we're two 11-year-old boys sometimes, and I would say, let's run and jump off that cliff and see what happens. He'd say, okay. Because there is an element of fearlessness in there, but it's the sense of humor which is powerful. And you said something to me when I was feeling really bad. It was a couple of days before we went to Yuwipi, and my depression was so heavy, and you know, people were calling me wonderful things and strong, and I'm going, no, man, you don't understand. I'm depressed. I'm suicidal. I'm crazy. I have suicidal thoughts. But I can't deal with the cold. I'm sick. I'm all messed up. And then I asked you, did the great war chiefs ever get this depressed? Do you remember what you said?
Uh-huh.
Sure, man. How do you think they felt in the 1890s?
Yeah.
And I believe that it's important for people, for all of us who are family facing our death now, to appreciate that none of us will approach the challenges ahead feeling any other way. This is what binds us together. Right, Chris?
Yes. Yeah, it's so important to have that sense of humor, and it shows a certain level of detachment to be able to laugh in the face of danger.
And that's super important. There's another thing about weaving together of prophecies. I've spent some time studying a number of different prophecies, and I see enormous commonalities between many of them. not just here on Turtle Island, but between the prophecies of the Vedas, and you are very, very educated on the issue of prophecies. I'm especially moved by the power of prophecy, Rock, of the Hopis, and you know more about this stuff than I do. If you were to try to find a common theme for what's happening to the human race and Mother Earth right now, what would you say that it is?
Well, the common theme is definitely change. And I know change is something that's inherent, but this is a major change that's happening with human beings, and I'm sure that all spiritual traditions would agree on that premise. But there's also something more specific, where the instruction to us is to stay close to the earth and not to rely upon this other type of reality that's coming into play.
Mm-hmm.
And may well have to do with the technology and the computer, and probably has more to do with domestication, but may even be more solid than that even. But the main focus really is to stay close to the earth and to trust the earth rather than a false environment.
Don Alejandro, Wandering Wolf of the Mayan People. I've read some of his stuff. He made a beautiful movie called Shift of the Ages. And, of course, the Mayans have been horribly. And you traveled. You traveled to Mexico, Central America. You've been around. You've been around. You know, he offered advice, and by the way, just for the record, the Mayans never said that everything was going to end on December 21st, 2012. They said,
right,
one age ends, one age begins, and I'm pretty much convinced that the energy shift actually occurred on that date. We are witnessing the effects of that now. But what he said, what he recommended, because he was traveling all over the place, I mean four or five continents, what he said was that now is the time when everybody should follow their own way and walk their own tradition as hard as they can. How does that translate, or does it? That's a 3D question. How does that help, and how do we find unity from that?
Yeah, well, the unity in that is very simple, and I think some of the words in that may get in the way, because in all honesty, our spiritual path is all just one thing. We all have the same spirit. We have different souls, but we're alive from one spirit. So we're, you know, body, soul, and spirit. We're three steps from related to the center of the universe. So that whole concept of getting in touch with your own ways, your own path, and not necessarily your traditions. These are traditions and are useful in a lot of ways, just like the different mediums for artwork, you know, are good for different people.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody may be good at watercolor. Somebody else might be good at sculpture. And I think it's very much the same expression.
Mm-hmm. Okay, we are down to the last 10 minutes of the hour. I've got a song, and I talked about synchronicity tonight. When I went to my first song practice over Chris's last Saturday, because they've changed, they used to do it on Sundays, and I wasn't able to go, and I was glad. I met this really cool brother named Kofi, who went with us to Albuquerque, and he is an amazing musician, and we drummed together and we sang together at Chris's. And Kofi is a Rasta guy who's also got this picture in very, very well. And this is an amazing song. We're going to play that and come back and close out with Chris Long of the Singing Stone Lodge. We'll give all that information at the end of the show. But here's an amazing song by our friend, Chris's and my friend, Alexander Kofi. The band is called the Ja Kings, and the song is called Critical Mass. Let's hear it, and then we'll be back with Chris.
We're at Critical Mass. Whoa, whoa. Critical Mass.
how can our mother take this pain while men kind of busy fussing and fighting, arguing about climate change? Well, listen to the wisdom of my indigenous people, eh? Amazingly, right before my eyes, I've seen plenty transmuting in the sheeple. Transmuting in the sheeple, that's why we got critical mass. Whoa, whoa, we're at critical mass. Whoa, whoa, critical mass. Whoa, 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 whoa.
Alexander Kofi, Chris and my friends, who I believe played everything on that song that he wrote. He's an amazing musician. You can find the song Critical Mass by Jock Kings and Alexander Kofi at ReverbNation.com. I'm sure he's listening, so let's give him a shot. We've got like 5 minutes left. Chris Long of Singing Stone Lodge, SingingStone.com here in Crestone, Colorado, who I am honored to learn from and honored to practice my spirituality with, and his family, his wonderful wife, Andrea. They sing amazing, and we would have played some of your songs except for we don't have URLs for them. But when you get them, I'm going to play you and Andrea and all of us singing. Well, maybe not all of us singing, because you guys sing so well and Andrea is so beautiful. I got to give a shout out to Andrea and to Aaliyah, who are just absolutely amazing members of this family and who work so hard and who contribute. Shouts to both of them. Chris, there is a very well-known phrase called the seventh generation. And when the white man first showed up, well, I don't know if it was Chief Seneca or not, but he said that this horror would continue for seven generations. Crazy Horse spoke of it. John Trudell, it is well known. Tell us about the seventh generation, but more important, tell us what you know about what happens when the seventh generation happens, because this is it, and it looks like stuff's happening. What does all that mean?
There's a cycle. It's just like they used to say that your brain changes every 7 years.
Mm-hmm.
You basically have a new mind then. And that's very much what's happening now, is that we've reached this seventh generation, and things are going to begin changing. And
ain't no begin about it, brother.
Yeah, and it's not necessarily the changes that we make. These are changes that the Earth is making for us, our mother.
That is the one safe place, you know, because I've pondered this for a long time because of the many different spiritual paths that I've studied as I've walked the red path. All roads lead to great mystery. They all lead to Creator. There are many paths up the mountain, but the view from the top is the same. But the one thing for us that seems to be the only safe place for all of us who are so aware of and so concerned about nuclear energy, radiation, absolutely out of control and worsening, climate chaos due to global warming, and the obvious now collapse of the white man's 3D Cartesian reality. That's what's happening. 2 minutes left. The only safe place for us now is in the heart of Mother Earth, right? Yes?
Yes.
Come on, show some conviction. Yes.
You know, our life is short, and life goes on beyond this. There's a whole lot more happening here, and this is just one part of it.
And we are privileged to be here. There are, and I ascribe to the belief that my soul, if you will, fought for a ringside seat to be in the position that I'm in, although there are times when I seriously question the wisdom of that. But we are all at a unique moment in history, as Terence McKenna would say, in discussing the eschaton, when we face the end. But this is the madness the fire in the madhouse as a species that is half God, half monkey, if you will, chooses or evolves and reaches out for the stars. Chris?
Yeah, definitely. This is a time when we need to be doing that.
And this is a time when it's happening and we face it together. And Chris Long, last minute, I'm going to have to sign off, but I want to thank you so much. Chris Long of the Singing Stone Lodge, singingstone.com, correct?
Uh-huh.
Here in Crestone, Colorado, you can find the schedules there, and that's where I go. If you're ever through Crestone, you definitely want to check it out. But there is lots of wisdom like this around, and if we have done anything tonight in reaching out to all of us around the world, we hope that we've shared some experience, strength, and hope, and we walk away from the show tonight feeling a little bit stronger and a little more connected. Chris, thank you so much.
Thank you, Michael.
I'll see you very soon, Uncle.
Uh-huh. Bye.
Okay. All right, it's Mike Rupert, Tracker of Truth. Next week, my guest is Mimi Gurman of Radcast. The Radcast website is up and running. It's cool. Mimi is doing some great work. I promised I'd have her back. She'll be with us next week. Sometime in March, Rich Heinberg will be on. But I'm out here doing the thing, and one more week. And if I wake up, not if, when I wake up tomorrow morning, I will be 63 years old. Who'd have thought? All right, guys, we'll see you next week on the Lifeboat Hour. I love you. Good night.